afternoon and welcome to the Jason Rand Show on AM 770 KTTH. We are streaming on the KTTH smartphone app, which means if you go into the app right this moment, not only can you listen to the show, but you can also watch it. We've got multi-camera set up here. It's a lot of fun to watch me yell behind the scenes and then realize, oh no, it's actually being broadcast. Maybe I ought not to do that. A local pastor says the Seattle Times killed an ad buy when the publisher learned it was promoting a church. And they did it apparently just 2 days before the ad was supposed to go live. That is What's Trending, brought to you by Legacy Group Capital Northwest Fund.
What's Trending? A Jason Rant exclusive.
I'm told, according to a local pastor by the name of Russell Johnson, who is a friend of the show, he leads the Pursuit Northwest Church, which has campuses in Snohomish, Kirkland, and now in Seattle, that they were to buy a Easter Sunday ad a week before Easter, Palm Sunday. It cost $18,500. This was the best ad you can get. This was the most expensive ad you can get. But he says after everything was approved, after the contract was signed, after they spent not just energy but money designing the ad, that he was told the publisher found out 2 days before it was to go live that this was promoting a church and they couldn't have that. That's off brand. And so they killed it. That's what he says. Now, we've reached out to the Seattle Times. Shockingly, they did not provide a comment or even an acknowledgement that I sent them an email.
I thought they love you over there.
Some of them don't even know who I am, which is odd. So that's okay. They don't have to. That's on them. But this is a concerning story, not because they don't have a right to determine what advertisements they take. Of course they do. Of course they do. And I didn't see anything in the contract that said they couldn't do something like this. We're the same way on KTTH. We don't just take any advertising. Although if you have some money that you'd like to spend, why don't you come contact me and we'll put you in touch with an AE. Just saying. But we don't just take any advertiser. Same way I don't endorse just any company that says, hey, I'd like you to be an endorser. I'll pay your fee. I like the fee part, but I don't necessarily like your company, so I'm going to have to pass. And I've done that before. And they have every right to do that. But that's not really what this is about. I think this is something a little bit deeper. It says something about just the climate in Seattle, the climate over at the Times, what it is they stand for. But also, this is about putting undue work that cost money on the Pursuit Northwest that they didn't actually have to spend if this was always going to be how it was going to end. Now, Pastor Johnson told me that he reached out to the Seattle Times on February 9th, and they were pretty upfront about what it is they wanted to do. In fact, I have the emails to read from. Johnson wrote, I'm interested in the largest and most prominent ad space that the Seattle Times offers. I believe that would be the double-sided flap that folds over the front. It's called the Spadilla. Did you know what that thing was called?
Spadilla? I saw that like on a menu once or something.
I thought that that was an STD, but apparently it is not. That's what it is. Now, the ad would feature Passion Week-related graphics, cross, crown of thorns, empty tomb, etc., and an invite to church for the following Sunday. Please advise on cost, availability, and if the Times is willing to run a religiously themed advertisement. Pretty clear up front and addressing one issue that was probably on their minds, which is, are they even going to allow it? Because, you know, those godless people in Seattle and at the Times probably don't necessarily like us. Will they take our money? Our money is just as good as anybody else's. And they got a response. They said, yeah, we'll work with you. We got to work through some of these issues, right? We got to make sure that the copy is appropriate. And of course, all the other technical stuff, like, you know, the ads that you give us have to fit our space and whatnot. But they obviously were willing to work on this because 3 days after he sent that email, which, by the way, is a little bit long to get a response from a marketing specialist who wants your money, especially if you're part of a dying breed of medium, right? I mean, we can be honest.
What are they doing
newspaper
over there?
Yeah, I'm just, are they just overwhelmed with emails saying, I'd like to spend the most amount of money possible on any one of your ads? But they got an email 3 days later from a marketing specialist saying that there was interest in exploring this further with you. He offered the price tag of $18,500. He gave the guidelines around religious advertising and basically said, hey, can I also get a rough draft of what it is you like to do as far as messaging? In fact, he said, according to this email, if you have a very rough draft of the text and a general description of imagery you want to use, which, by the way, dum-dum, he already put in the actual email that you are responding to. You remember that whole thing of thorn crown and you got that? Okay. We can get some initial approval on our side as the creative is refined. Okay. Now, the final message that ended up in this ad went through some edits. They worked with the team over at the Seattle Times to make it appropriate and in line with the guidelines. The final message had originally said war on hell and revival or die. They switched that over. It was much, I don't know, more positive, I suppose. The ad copy that eventually got the green light, according to the pastor, was that it said, "Grave is empty, Jesus is risen. Jesus still saves, heals, and delivers, and hope for every sinner." That was the copy.
I mean, the original one better, but
I did
a little more fire and brimstone.
I'm not even the target audience, but I found the original one a little bit better, too. There's obviously some more to that, but it was all given the green light, according to the pastor. And the thing is, and this is backed up by at least email records, not necessarily coming from the marketing specialist, because people are smart enough not to put some things in writing sometimes, assuming that's what happened. But I got the email that was forwarded by the pastor to his attorney on March 20th that said, "The owner personally stepped in today and canceled your ad." That's what he was told, he says, by the marketing specialist. He told that to his attorney. Now, he's speaking to us exclusively. We'll have the interview available at ktth.com after today's show. We'll be airing, obviously, the interview during today's show. But what was really interesting to me, or revealing, I suppose, is that the pastor said he was told that Frank Blevin, the publisher, upon learning that this was going to happen 2 days beforehand, went into the marketing specialist's office or reached out to him saying, no, we're not going to do this. And according to Pastor Johnson, having spoken to the marketing specialist, they said something along the lines of, you know, it didn't really fit with the ethic of the paper. So it was a little bit off-brand, in other words, which, in fairness, probably is a little bit off-brand for the Seattle Times promoting a church. I actually believe it's off-brand. Not that it's a bad brand that you're associating with yourself if you're the Times. I mean, again, I'm Jewish, so I'm a different demographic. I like what the pastor does. I think he is a really important part of the community. He's very smart. He's very wise. He's very active in the community. I mean, he was one who originally, this was back, I can't remember the date, but it was still in October, maybe early November. He started this rally in support of Israel at UW's Red Square because he wanted to push back against all the hate that he was seeing. And there were a lot of supporters from the church who showed up. It wasn't all Jews. These were folks who were not Jewish. I mean, Jews obviously were there, but you know, this was a community that the church has created and developed, and they wanted to show their support. And you know, I find them to be very friendly to the cause, and really the causes outside of Israel that all of us care deeply about. They're obviously conservative, as far as politically speaking, or from a principle standpoint. So the issue for me is that they made this decision pretty much at the last minute. Now, they didn't charge, obviously, the $18,500. Weirdly enough, although it was against the brand, I guess, to put it on the most prominent pages of the Times, they offered a concession, according to an email that I saw from the marketing specialist, at a $3,500 discount, plus free digital art that they would create, but they would put the ad in a less prominent position. And the pastor responded like, "No, I appreciate it." And he was very cordial. I don't even think he's mad at the marketing specialist. I think he's more mad at the situation and the publisher. But he's like, "I appreciate that, but you just pulled our ad at the last minute. Hashtag not cool." I added the hashtag, but that was basically the gist of his complaint. I believe they have the right to do this. They do. Doesn't make it right, but they have the right to do it. What I don't believe is that they should not have to at least compensate the church for any meaningful dollars that were spent. Now, because of the very specific nature of these kinds of advertisements, just like with the layout, they probably were not going to make ads looking just like this. And obviously they made, you know, revisions, which meant very clearly that they had to put extra work into this. Because one could say, oh, it's just a web ad, for example. They can put that anywhere they're probably going to create. Okay, fair enough. I got that. That's not the case here. Now, I don't know how much money they spent in creating this, but I'm assuming they can find that out pretty easily, because it's not just about, again, I don't know if they did all the artwork internally, for example, or they put it out. Well, you know how much your graphic designer makes per hour. Like, it's those kinds of things that I think is reasonable for them to compensate them with. You know, I don't know if this is going to go to a lawsuit. He's obviously talking with an attorney. And again, he'll be on the show today to give us his perspective on all of this and where he's thinking this might go. But he's right to call it all out. And he's right to say that there is this general hostility towards religion and God in the Seattle area generally. He's obviously a key part of pushing back against that. He obviously has a lot on the line, right, to want to bring people into the church. And rabbis locally have the same position. I'm assuming imams have this, like, everyone's pretty much on the same page of, we believe our religion and our religious community, and arguably it's the community aspect of organized religion that is the most important outside of the obvious of believing in God. But, you know, communities that believe, communities that have a shared interest, and they come from very similar, if not the same, values and principles and morals, you're much happier. The community is usually much safer. People actually care about one another. And in Seattle, kind of don't really get that. And I say Seattle, I kind of mean as a catch-all for Washington and really just blue states. You're particularly religious, new producer slash religious icon, Jackson. I mean, do you get that general-ish sense?
Yeah, definitely.
Right. I mean, it just feel. But how do you feel you're treated, or just religion in general is treated?
Oh, I think everyone here is godless heathens. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, are you though?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a hostility towards it, I think.
So what does that mean to you? What is the hostility? Is it that, like, mocking? Is it?
Yeah, or just that, you know, religious people are, you know, backwoods troglodytes that are, you know, from a bygone era. And, mm-hmm. you know,
well,
I would call
you a Luddite, but not a troglodyte. Yeah. But you're fair enough.
And, you know, us progressives, you know, we're so
we're
smart.
We're evolved. We're post-God.
Yeah.
We're post-religion, which is just sad in a lot of ways. Regardless of the religion anyone believes in, at the end of the day, I don't care. If you believe in God, that's awesome. But the folks who think that they're evolved because they think that after death, they just cease to exist. And I just can't even wrap my head around that as a concept, right? It's impossible to truly wrap your head around it as a concept, because it goes into all of these different questions you have. Well, how were you created to begin? Like, how did that happen? What? And, you know, religion doesn't provide all the answers. It's faith-based. You have to have faith, because you can say, well, how did God become God? Like, how did that all? You can't really just give any kind of definitive answer on most of this stuff. That's why they call it faith. But to have no faith whatsoever, that there's just like, what is keeping you sort of in bounds as just an individual? Not to say that people who are religious don't sometimes color outside the lines, and well, I'll stick to the sports analogy, foul sometimes, and oftentimes they do. In fact, everyone is a sinner. That is one of the main points that we often hear. But how do you, I just don't get it. And what a sad life. So that means, in a lot of ways, everything you do on this earth is kind of meaningless in the grand scheme of things. Short term, no, because you're assuming you're a good person. You know, you're treating people well and people feel happy when you treat them well. Fine. But that's it.
That's depressing.
Right? It's super depressing. And I can't stop thinking about all of these issues ever since I turned 29 for the 14th year. It's just, I'm old. My life is half over, probably, let's be honest, probably more than that over. And I can't help but think of that. And this idea that, you know, first of all, because I'm just a crazy person, as much as I believe in God, Judaism is a little bit different about the quote unquote afterlife than what other people believe. And we don't believe in hell, so that's a good thing. But you know, what if I'm wrong? I always think that. Just I'm naturally, oh, as much as I have faith, and I don't think I am, I'm open to the idea that maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it's you guys over there on your side that know what you're talking about. Or maybe you don't either, and everyone's kind of wrong, but we're kind of hovering in the same space. That makes me feel a little bit better. But I don't know. I'm just having this, like, crisis, I think.
I won't say midlife, but you're having a crisis.
I mean, I'm midlife, right? I mean, what's the life expectancy in the United States? I think it's 84. I think I'm quite literally midlife, according to the stats.
Oh, I mean, I think you're going to live a long time, though. So.
No, shut up. Don't humor me. Don't humor me. Don't condescend to me. But now you probably just jinxed it. Knock on wood. Knock on wood. People who are watching the camera saw you actually knocked on. I don't even think this is a wooden table. It's like a laminate.
Does yeah. That count? Composite materials or something.
Knock on laminate. Knock on it. Okay. The story will be up. It's actually up right now at ktth.com, the details. We'll get the interview posted at ktth.com later this evening. But again, this is one of those stories. I think it raises a lot of important questions. I don't know if at the end of the day, the Seattle Times will do the right thing. Let me say that they're not going to do the right thing. I can just go out on a limb and say that now I feel comfortable doing that. Prove me wrong. I'm happy to be proven wrong on that. But we all kind of know where they're coming from. Text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-8770, and I'll send you a link directly to my blog so you can read it. And as importantly, make sure you're sharing the story so we get more eyeballs on this. 1-800-465-8770. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Legal.
So yesterday afternoon, Judge Gary Basher out in Cowlitz County bashed the high-capacity magazine ban here in Washington State. See what I did there? Because his last name is Basher, and I said he bashed. You guys see what I did?
Very well done.
Yeah, thank you very much. It's called wordplay. So he said that this is very clearly unconstitutional. Now, of course, it's almost a joke at this point when we have conversations like this, because I love the idea that we consider in Washington State, or progressives do, that 12 rounds is a high capacity magazine. I love the idea that 12 rounds is, when clearly all they did was Google, like, what are some of the most common magazine capacity numbers? You didn't find it, tell some intern, because these people have never held a firearm. Their only understanding of firearms is through fear-mongering on the news and movies and TV shows. Honestly, these people have never held a gun. I don't even think, outside of a cop maybe, they probably never even been close to a firearm. I get why people are concerned about firearm safety. They should be. They're dangerous, or can be if you're irresponsible. But what they basically did was say, let's find one that's really, really common. Let's ban it so we can make it even harder for current gun owners and make the options less available for people who are purchasing for the first time or purchasing another firearm. That's what they did. But the judge and his decision here, really, really well written. Not that I don't trust someone out of Cowlitz County, but you don't really hear about judges out of Cowlitz County making these kinds of massive decisions. So I actually read the full decision, and it's really, really well done. I mean, he writes, it is logically inconceivable that an item that is constitutionally protected to possess could be prohibited from sale to the very people who have the protected right to possess it. He's 100% correct. It's the same as banning bullets. You can't ban bullets. You can't ban the firearm tool or piece of the firearm that you need for it to be an actual firearm. Otherwise, it's just, what, a paperweight at that point if you can't have a bullet to put in it. But the whole story comes out of Gators Custom Guns out in Kelso, because they apparently ignored the law. This, according to Bob Ferguson's office, they ignored the law and just continued to sell the hot, quote-unquote, high-capacity magazines. Here's Bob Ferguson speaking to KATU.
There are reasonable restrictions on all of our constitutional rights, and that includes the Second Amendment. Obviously, respect the fact that people have different views on this. That's the nature of living in a democracy like this.
No, you don't.
But the one thing that is non-dispute is that court after court after court after court has upheld these laws as being consistent with the Second Amendment, and those judges have been judges of all orientations.
What he just said is so incredibly disingenuous. What happened recently? 2022. Any ideas? Say the Bruin decision came out from the Supreme Court.
Well, there's the Bruin decision in the Supreme Court.
Precisely. And what does the Bruin decision say as it relates to whether or not a gun law or reform, however you want to call it, is constitutional? Is it based in a historical context?
It's based in a historical context.
Precisely. This is why you were hired, because you really take a deep dive into the constitutionality of different, you know, decisions that are made, the arguments, the reasoning. They look after the Bruin decision, 2022, it builds upon the Heller case. This was another handgun case that basically said, yeah, you do have a personal right to self-defense with or self-protection or the right to bear arms as an individual. What Bruin did was say, here's a test that you have to look at. It's not whether or not there's some societal good that comes out of it. We're tossing that away. You don't look at that anymore. It's, is there a historical example that you can point to that says, yeah, in this case, there were some regulations on maybe not magazine capacity, but how many bullets you can have at one any given time. I mean, you got to go back all the way to the founding. If the answer is yes, and this is not a huge departure from that, okay, then your bill is not constitutional or unconstitutional. However, if there is an example that said the opposite, which is, oh, we're going out of our way to make sure you can have as many bullets or magazines. Again, we're going before magazines all the way back. You can have as many of that as you want. The ruling of this court is that you can never do that. Well, okay, then you're screwed. Now, there's a possibility in which there is no historical analog at all. Like, it just doesn't exist. And I imagine that if you're arguing for magazine capacity, you're probably going to make that case. But if there becomes other historical laws that have been passed in favor or against, even if it happened after the founding, they might end up using that. The reason why this matters, when he says all of these courts have looked at it, yeah, that was before 2022. That was before the Bruin case. We have not, in Washington State, for example, had an anti-gun case in front of the Supreme Court post-Bruin. They've already ruled, weirdly enough, that Heller does in fact mean you can have a gun. But they also, especially on political issues, and especially when they think they can get away with it, they will then say, well, I'm going to ignore the Constitution. I'm elected anyway, and I'm totally comfortable here. Yeah, we're just going to deem it constitutional. You can continue to ban the weapons. This is ultimately going to get to the U.S. Supreme Court. This general issue, maybe not this particular case, but this issue is going to get there and they'll be the ones deciding. Now, if it's the current Supreme Court, great news. If it changes or if it goes 5-4 with a new president, maybe someone retires or God forbid someone were to pass, it's a little iffy. I don't know how John Roberts would rule on this one. But if you give me 7-2, I'm feeling really good about that. Give me another conservative. That's why this next election is especially important. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text. 1-800-465-8770. You're listening to The Jason Rand Show. Welcome back to The Jason Rand Show. Thank you so much for tuning in. We just talked about guns, so we might as well just dive into abortion, right? Let's just get all the heavy hitting topics.
Very grim show today.
It's not grim. We actually had some good news on the gun front.
That's true.
And I suppose, depending on your position, we had some good news on the abortion front. Although it's going to be very, 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 very politically tricky to navigate and probably harms Republicans during this next election, at least in Arizona. This is what, as much as today Democrats are complaining about a Supreme Court decision in Arizona that effectively bans abortions, they love this. They love this. This is what they needed. The only thing they wish would have happened is do it in October. That's the only thing that they wish would have happened. Now, some of you probably already saw this because of the just insane response by some folks on the left. But the Arizona Supreme Court upheld an abortion ban that 14 days from now could conceivably, but probably not, close abortion clinics in the state. And this is the one positive in all of this, just from a political standpoint. I'm not talking about abortion as an issue, but from a political standpoint, pretty much nothing's going to change even after the 14 days. There's been so much misinformation about this one decision. Here's the thing. No, Women cannot suddenly go to jail for receiving or trying to receive an abortion. That's not what the bill said at all. Number two, it is not a total ban. If the law were to be now followed just to the T, this is not a total ban. You can get an abortion in a case of the life of the mother. The Supreme Court ruling only said that the law is constitutionally enforceable. That's all they said. Now, they say clearly that if it's going to be enforced, y'all better get ready, because this very clearly can go into effect. The reason why that matters in this particular case was that this was about the law, or a law, I should say, that was passed before Arizona actually became a state. And so the question was, well, can that still, does this one apply? It's 160 plus years old. Are we really going to lean on this? And they said, well, yeah, you can. Now, the reason why I say nothing's going to change is because there was an executive order that was passed by Katie Hobbs, the governor, when she first took office. I think that, right, it was shortly after where Roe v. Wade was overturned. And what she basically said was the enforcement of any abortion law lie within the attorney general's office. Now, she's got a Democrat attorney general who's basically said, yeah, we're not enforcing any of these laws. However, it is certainly possible that a county prosecutor can actually move forward and try to get this a ban in place. A county attorney, I should say. They can just say, oh, yeah, we challenge this. And I guess feasibly you might have counties that have abortion and other ones that don't. It would be a little bit weird, I suppose, from a, you know, what you traditionally deal with, which is it's either banned across the state or it's not. So you might get a little bit tricky there. But for the most part, I don't think that this is going to change anything. There is going to be an initiative. They started this several months ago. They've got over 500,000 signatures that would codify abortion as a right. That 100% is going to pass. And that's why this is politically tricky for Republicans. On this issue, we lose 9 times out of 10. The only time we win on this issue, including in states that are red, remember Kansas, remember Ohio, we will lose this. The only one we win, third trimester abortion, partial birth abortion, anything that is clearly to a reasonable person who supports abortion access would say, okay, that's extreme. That's murder at that point. Like if a child can be viable outside of the womb and you're aborting, yeah, that's murder. That's what that's called. They might not hold that view if you're 6 weeks pregnant or, 7 weeks pregnant. But to be clear, the other issue, we win. And if this was only about that, we would win all the time. But it's not only about that because of issues like this. I understand why people want to ban abortion. I'm pro-life. I'm with you. However, I'm also acknowledging that we're going to lose that 100% of the time. And so what can we actually win? And I want to go as far as possible to restrict abortions without having it sort of slap us in the face, guaranteeing that a progressive is put in office and then takes all of those restrictions back and then goes even further to the other side to get abortions not just protected, but to expand how long one can get an abortion. And right now, the Democrats are unwilling to say there should be any restrictions on abortion. I don't know why they consider that to be a controversial position. I love the idea where they say, the argument, they say, well, no one, it's very rare to have a third trimester abortion, and it's only in cases of the health of the mother. And here's my response to that. Okay, let's ban it, and let's give a carve out when it's not elective. It's really easy to ban partial birth abortion. It's really easy to ban an abortion right before a pregnancy is due by saying elective abortions should be banned after whatever the third trimester, whatever it is you want to do. But stuff is, oh, no one ever does it. Let's call them out on that bluff. If no one ever did it and it was only done truly because of the life of the mother, well, that would be protected anyway. And so what are we fooling ourselves? They don't want that to be banned from an elective position. which is why I wish when people ask this actual question of politicians, they would say elective abortions instead of saying just abortion.
They're also just kind of lying because there's like 10,000 late-term abortions every year. So
I'm living in the world in which we call their lie out, right? Just call the bluff. Okay, it doesn't happen. We'll give those people a pass. And the rest of them can't do it. If it's an elective abortion because you found out it's going to be a girl and you were hoping for a boy and you were kind of on the fence, but now you're all like, no, never mind. I don't want to do it anymore because if this girl is born, I mean, I'm sure we're going to have Handmaid's Tale imagery coming back again as we get closer to the election. And they may, yeah, sorry. That's, to me, that's disgusting. It's immoral. And it is, in fact, murder. Sorry. That might offend some people, I guess, but that's my position. But if you go for the total abortion bans, it never works. Never, ever, ever. Now, yesterday, he kind of preempted this. Donald Trump, he got ahead of it in an, I'm assuming, an unintentional way. I don't think he knew that there was going to be a Supreme Court case out of Arizona decided today. But he put out, Donald Trump put out his official stance on abortion. And I say that post-Dobbs decision. What is his actual stance? And he managed to upset some folks on the right. How many of them will be upset enough to say, I'm not going to vote for him? Probably zero is my guess on this. But he came out with a very reasonable position, I think, to the majority of Americans.
My view is now that we have abortion where everybody wanted it from a legal standpoint, the states will determine by vote or legislation or perhaps both. And whatever they decide must be the law of the land. In this case, the law of the state. Now it's up to the states to do the right thing. Like Ronald Reagan, I am strongly in favor of exceptions for rape, incest, and life of the mother. You must follow your heart on this issue, but remember, you must also win elections to restore our culture.
That is exactly the argument. I know from a principled standpoint on this issue, it doesn't feel very satisfying. It almost feels like you're cheating on the issue a little bit. And I guess technically you are, but that's just the reality. That is the reality. According to the law, states have a say in this. Some states don't want to ban abortion. Others maybe kind of do, but usually not. Kind of depends on where you live. If you live in a state that does not want to ban abortion, you have to work within that system in order to either change everyone's minds or, probably a little bit easier and politically doable, put in place reasonable restrictions to folks who right now don't want to ban abortion and then win the argument. Otherwise, you are just going to set yourself up for failure. And Donald Trump put out the statement yesterday in this way. And I say this as someone who likes him. I have no idea how he really feels about abortion because this was very clearly a smart decision, but a political decision. If he comes out and says he's anti-abortion, it makes it very, very easy for him to lose. It makes it very easy for him to lose in Michigan, in Wisconsin, in Arizona. Right now, what's one voting demographic that traditionally goes with Democrats in a huge number, but now clearly they're not? And it's one that you might not think of immediately, so I'm not going to cheat. What's the demographic that always in big numbers, generally speaking, goes Democrat, but now all of a sudden they have been pretty, they're not winning on the Trump side, this demographic, but they picked up a lot.
Women?
Nope.
Young people?
Yep. Young people. And Biden knows that. Biden's team knows that. And what's one issue that they are pretty liberal on, regardless of how they vote politically?
Abortion.
Well, that was kind of, I set it up. That was an easy one. If you screwed that one up,
yeah, I know.
You might be in the wrong job. It's abortion. What happened yesterday with Biden? What did he do? Do you remember? What did he introduce?
The student loan forgiveness. Oh,
who's that to appeal to?
Young people.
Young people. And so Donald Trump comes out in favor of a total abortion ban. You don't think that's going to be used to freak out a bunch of younger voters and finally get them more, you know, excited about this election? Because right now they're not excited, other than Victor Shi and Harry Enten, I guess, on social media. Insufferable. Oh, my God. They'll take a photo. These are young social media influencers. I think all their followers have to be fake. There's no way that Harry Enten or Victor Shi have more followers than I do. I just refuse to accept that.
You mean Harry Sisson?
Is that what his name
is? I think Harry Enten's like the election guy.
Okay, whoever. I can't stand him. It's the young 21.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about.
they'll post like a selfie on a bridge somewhere and say, oh, I feel so excited to vote for Joe Biden when it comes to, I can't wait until November. Oh my God, everyone I talk to loves him. It's like, okay. The other one, I spoke to my uncle, who is a diehard Donald Trump fan, except now he refuses. He's saying he's voting for Joe Biden. And they never really give an actual reason as to why this pretend uncle that you don't actually have is going to vote. I hate those people. But this is the crowd that pushes all that garbage. And so Donald Trump was right to take this position. Again, just politically speaking, Sean Hannity said this.
Any Republican that would ever take a position, and the president was clear in his statement on this too, any Republican that would take a position, no exceptions for rape, incest, or the mother of his life, that is political suicide.
Yeah, it is.
Any Republican that calls for a flat-out ban politically, I'm talking politically now, that would be outright suicide. But I'll tell you one thing, and this would be an admonition for any conservative or any Republican running, is that is, if you're going to take that extreme position, you are going to lose votes.
Yeah, I know people don't like to hear that on the pro-life side. I get it, believe me. But it is a reality. It is 100% a reality. And I have respect for someone who says, you know what, I don't care if it means I lose elections. I'm going to stick with it. Okay, I totally respect that. But there are going to be some consequences with that. 1-800-465-8770 for your text messages. 1-800-465-8770. We've done guns and abortion. We'll do transgender issues next. Let's just dive in. Let's just get it all out of the way on the Jason Rand Show. To the Jason Rand Show. Thank you so much for tuning in. I meant to talk about this yesterday, and then ironically, I forgot to talk about it on The Leftovers, which is a podcast I do every single day with stories I don't get to on the show because I don't want to stop talking and I don't want to go home and live a solitary, lonely, just sad life where no one likes me and no one calls. The coach of the South Carolina women's basketball team, Dawn Staley, is that her name? I'm assuming she's a big deal, kind of.
I mean, I don't really watch women's basketball, but...
You sexist! Why don't you? It's just as good. Actually, it's better than men's sports. Oh my God, I can't stand that. Did you know it's better than every single women's sport is way better than every single men's sport? And if you don't support it, you hate women.
And Caitlin Clark could play in the NBA.
Oh my God, yeah, okay. I'll believe that. Who was that dummy who posted that tweet? I just wanted to scream. So she said, if you consider yourself a woman, you don't even have to be a woman, but if you consider yourself a woman, you should be able to compete against biological women. And she absolutely loves that. She thinks that this is totally fair.
I'm on the opinion of.
Just say your opinion. You don't have to
introduce it. If you're a woman, you should play.
If you're a woman.
If you consider yourself a woman and you want to play sports or vice versa.
By the way, I agree with that part. You can play whatever sports you want. I don't care. I don't think you should be able to play with the opposite gender. Now, how about this? This never gets tested. If you consider yourself a man and you're biologically female, you should compete against the men. Why is it that we don't get those kinds of stories? Every once in a while in college, you'll get like a punter who's not really a football player. But outside of that, and I think it was one time, and she was like the backup's emergency in case something happens. And that was what, remember what school that was? Was it Princeton or something? It was from a year or so ago. It didn't go well. She bombed completely. And it feels like kicking is the easiest thing you can do.
Definitely.
On that field, right? I mean, of all the positions, it's probably the easiest one. We don't get those stories. Is it because men are better than women?
You did?
Yeah.
I didn't say it. You did.
I did. Yeah. That's not controversial. That's based in fact. If you're talking about peak athletic ability up against one another, there is an advantage to men. Women have advantages in all sorts of things as well that men don't, and vice versa. This is not controversial at all. And the precise reason why you don't see trans men competing is because they always lose, or they know they would always lose. And so if that is a truth, well, the inverse is also true of trans females because they are biologically male. And when they compete, it is cheating. I don't think they mean to cheat. Sometimes some of them do, I think. There have been some of those stories. But I think overall, I'm willing to give someone the benefit of the doubt, and it must suck wanting to compete and not feeling like there's a league for you. I totally get that, and I have compassion for it. But the fact of the matter is, it doesn't mean that it's right or should be acceptable.
You should be able to play.
I just said that.
That's my opinion. You want me to go deeper?
No, but you will. Oh, gosh.
Do you think transgender women should be able to participate
That's your question you want
basketball.
Me to ask. I mean, you want to ask, so I'll give you that. Yes.
Very eloquent.
Yes. Yeah. So now the barnstorm of people are going to flood my timeline.
Like me.
And be a distraction to me.
I did.
On one of the biggest days of our game. Uh-huh. And I'm okay with that.
Well, why'd you just complain?
Really,
no, you don't sound like you're okay with it. It sounds like you're complaining about it. That was not a positive. You weren't happy that people are going to flood your Twitter feed. Why are you lying like that? Maybe she's lying about the transgender athletes.
Probably.
You know what the problem is with a statement like this? And it's obviously an open debate that the country's having. Everyone is overwhelmingly against what she just said, according to literally every single poll. But be that as it may, people are having this conversation and they're being asked this question. It's not so much that I care what their answer is per se, but know that not a single one of her players at any point now can come out and say the exact opposite, because they don't want to dismiss their coach's political position. Who's that basketball coach who is from Sacramento? The crazy one who's all hyper anti-gun and political.
Oh, Greg Popovich. San Antonio.
San Antonio?
Greg Popovich, yeah.
I think San Francisco because he's a nut job.
Well, Steve Kerr's kind of like that too.
Yeah. But so. I mean, you know, do you think any, let's just say that they were in college sports where the power dynamic is a little bit different. Would you think any player would feel comfortable speaking up on this? This impacts them way more than it impacts the coach. Way more than it impacts the coach. You can say, well, they're still going to win or lose, and that impacts everyone to a degree. But also, if you are being made a fool out on, whether we're talking about the basketball court or a hockey rink or whatever it is we're talking, you are losing out on opportunities that might land you, depending on how early this is happening, a college scholarship. It might hurt your opportunity to make it to another league or make it to an Olympics team and whatnot. Like, this actually does matter. And by the way, it could hurt you. Like, there's also that thing. We covered that story of that high school basketball team. I think it was on the East Coast a few weeks ago, where a biological male was playing, knocked the heck out of that poor girl. Like, it was dangerous. That's a legitimate concern, but you're not supposed to say anything because then you're a total bigot. Not supposed to say anything. Ron DeSantis is all like, well, that definitely means I'm going to say something.
Well, my take is evidenced by when I put my John Hancock on the legislation 3 years ago saying that in Florida, girls have a right to compete against other girls in competitions that have integrity and that are fair. And you can't have a biological male butt into these competitions and win the trophies. It's wrong.
He's right. He's absolutely right. And I love how there are some parents who are taking a really hard stance on you being a transphobe if you get in the way, not willing probably to even have a conversation with their own kid and say, well, how do you feel about this? Yeah, sure, you're going to probably not be able to be number one anymore, but it's for a greater political good. Don't you want to support it? Because if you don't, I'm going to take you off the team anyway. Yes, I am forcing you into this political position on my behalf, living vicariously through you, mostly because I was horrible at sports when I was younger. I didn't even make it to any team. And so I made sure that you devoted all of your time and energy so you would get good enough to be number one, only to then say, I like trans people more and they're going to be number one instead of you. That's the internal dialogue that happens.
Yeah, I mean, I think you pretty much hit the nail on the head.
I think I did. And again, nothing inherently controversial about just stating the truth, unless you're a radical leftist who thinks anytime someone holds a position that's different than their own is controversial. Other than them, push them aside. Everything that we believe on this issue is backed up, not just by science, but is backed up by every single poll. I don't think I've seen a single poll that shows Americans or just the global community supports the idea of having a biological man compete against a biological woman. It's even more egregious when it's younger. It's the Jason Rand Show.